it's now recording what I'm saying. So in a meeting or a lecture, as you take notes, it actually syncs up the audio to what you're writing. So you can go back afterwards, hit stop, and literally grab the pen and touch it on a word you wrote, and it will automatically start playing through the pen the audio that was being spoken about as you wrote that thing you wrote. It's... Pardon? No, it's an office, I got it from Officeworks. Yeah. $250, $300 for the pen and a couple of notebooks. It's the greatest thing I have invested in. Well, Santa brought me after a few letters. So I'm going to have a crack at actually recording tonight and see how it comes out. So I'll put on my blog and stuff tomorrow or Monday. So if you feel that what I talk about is actually worth hearing again, let's see how it goes. I guess before I get on to the when was the first time, when was the last time, you're saying for the first time, I'll share another story about two young kids, one named Billy and the other named Johnny. Billy's one of those kids that 4 or 5 years old and was always in a shitty mood. No matter what was going on, he was one of those young kids who was always upset, really sad, and nothing was ever good enough. Whereas Johnny, on the other hand, was one of those little kids who was always happy, always bubbly, always having a great time. And what these two psychologists tried to do in the States is actually work out whether their environment actually changes their attitudes. So what they did, they actually grabbed Billy first, a real sad little kid, and took him to a room with every conceivable toy a 4 or 5 year old would want to play with. There was fire engines, there was water pistols, there was Tonka trucks, which aren't made anymore, whatever the equivalent is these days. All the cool toys. They said, you know, here Billy, you've got an hour, go in there, have some fun. So they closed the door and let him go. They grabbed Johnny and took him down the hall to a different room. And in the room they put Johnny was nothing but horse manure. Open the door, here Johnny, here's some horse manure, go have some fun. So let him go for an hour. Now after the 55, 60 minutes went by, they went back to see Billy, the sad kid, to see if the environment with all the cool toys would actually make him happy. Opened the door, and to their amazement, there's Billy in the middle of this room, bawling his eyes out, just crying. You know, the two psychologists looked at each other and went, okay, Billy, what's going on? What's wrong? Why are you crying? And his tears like, that one's not the right colour. That water pistol doesn't shoot far enough. Every single toy had a problem. Every single one. And they were scratching their heads going, what is going on? Like, how is that possible? You know, there could be at least one toy he liked, but apparently not. So they noted that and said, oh, obviously the environment doesn't really change his attitude. So they went down the hall to check on Johnny. And again, they were just bewildered when they opened the door, because here's Johnny in the middle of that room, just throwing the horse manure all over the room, hitting the fan, hitting the roof, having an absolute blast. And again, they turned to each other and went, asked Johnny, what's going on? Looked up at them like they were crazy, going, I'm having fun like you told me to. And again, they're like, well, Johnny, how can you be having so much fun? There's nothing but horse manure. And he turns to the psychologist and said, with all this in here, there's got to be a pony someplace. I love that story. And, for a couple of reasons. One is that hopefully for the next 15 minutes I'm going to talk some crap, so try and look for the pony. Hopefully there'll be a pony in here somewhere for you. And also, too, it's just a good lesson that I like to live my life by, is just always try and find the pony and stuff. So, yeah, that's it. I'll start. B asked me to actually talk about the topic of when was the first time... Sorry, I always get it wrong. It's confusing. When was the last time you came for the first time? I started to sort of think, what the hell am I actually going to talk about? I sort of tell some stories and do this typical kind of lecture about, you know, getting out of your comfort zones and that kind of stuff. But I started to sort of pen some notes, and the three questions sort of kept coming back to me. So I thought I'd actually talk about them, tell some stories that aren't necessarily my stories. I'll get to those later in the Q&A section if we have one, if you can bother to hear my crap for longer. So the stories have nothing to do with the question of when was the last time you did something for the first time, but they have everything to do with the question, when was the last time you did something for the first time. The first question, I guess, that keeps coming to me is that, which is also what was touched on earlier in a discussion we had here, which I think is somewhat the message of this weekend, is why is everything being done the way it's done? And I guess it ties back into the original question is that when you're actually getting out of your comfort zone, it's not about necessarily doing something new, something completely different. It's just about doing what you're currently doing differently is enough to be something for the first time. So when you're looking at doing stuff, doing it differently, and the darndest thing happened on Christmas Day. I was at Fleur's house having Christmas and walked into the kitchen seeing Fleur's mum starting to prepare the roast, Christmas lunch. And so there's a big, you know, roast there, and she's cutting off both ends of the roast and putting it in the pan. I realised that's something Fleur does as well when she cooks a roast. It's about the only thing she cooks well, but luckily she's not here. But when she cooks a roast as well, she cuts both ends off the roast before putting in the pan to cook. And I'm like, I never really got that. So I asked Fleur's mum, why do you cut both ends of the roast off the roast before you cook it? And Fleur's mum turned around and said, well, I don't really know. Her mum cooked the best roast ever, and that's how she cooked her roasts. She used to cut both ends off the roast. So I went, okay, being the annoying, inquisitive person that I have, I ran through the kitchen out to the lounge room and went to the grandma and said, look, all the ladies in your family cook a great roast, and apparently they've all learnt from you, and why did you start cutting off the ends of the roast? How does that make the roast taste better? Because that's what the girls say it does. She's looked at me with a bit of giggle and said, oh, Sonny, it's not about making the roast taste better. My pan was just too short for the roast I used to make. And again, that's sort of the same sort of thing, is why you're doing what you've got to question what you're doing. It's all about the questioning that comes up with sort of things. And from a business context, there's a similar sort of, I guess, story about that as well that I share a lot. So I'll be quick because it's a bit different. But everyone's sort of seen the 25 words or less contests that are in the back of the cereal boxes and stuff like that. Sort of, you know, 24 words or less, why you like, you know, Kellogg's So Good or whatever the hell it might be. And there's obviously, there was a reason that was done in the first place. There's actually a scientific reason behind that, which I'll touch on in a moment. But there's so many people out there that just see, oh, this big company is doing this contest like this, I should do it too. And Angus and Robertson, maybe 6 months ago, ran a contest where they actually, was a 25 word or less contest. And what it was to promote a Shane Warne book, I think it was being sold at the time. And what it was in 25 words or less, write why you think Shane Warne's great. And I was like, okay, that's, you know, whatever your opinion of Shane Warne is, they probably would have got some very colourful responses. But that's not the issue. That when you actually take a step back and actually look at why the 25 word or less question was actually invented, what Angus and Robinson did is completely against that idea. See, a book called Influence by Robert Cialdini. Anyone read that book? It's probably in my top three books of all time. It's absolutely amazing. It just talks about the six principles that allow influence in the world. Social proof, authority, bunch of different things. And one of them is commitment and consistency. And it's about when you make a commitment to something, or like whether it be verbal or internal, whatever it might be, the human body or the human person or whatever the damn word should be, tends to try and be consistent with what they say, what they commit to. So that's where the 25 words or less contest actually originated, from that scientific element. By actually saying in 24 words or less why I like Kellogg So Good, I actually now write it down as an entry to the contest. So I've written that down. So next time I go to the supermarket, I'm going to actually just subconsciously be consistent with what I said. I'm going to walk down the aisle and go, oh, hang on, I like Kellogg So Good. I should buy that because I like it. So that's the reason it originally started. So whereas when you look at Angus and Robinson just trying to copy something that other people did, they just tried to model them, they modeled it completely wrong. Like 25 words less, why you like Shane Warne, it's not going to make people buy more books from Angus and Robinson. It's completely stupid. So I guess that's one of the things that I kept coming back to when I was actually trying to answer the question, when was the last time, and saying for the first time, is, well, what am I actually doing that would make something the first time happen something different? And that's just a couple of random stories that I thought had nothing to do with it, had everything to do with it. The second one is a really interesting story that talks about the concept of context and everything. I'm a big believer in, you know, what's the context of it? I ask that question a hell of a lot and annoy the hell out of the guys in the office today, because whenever they ask me a question, it's like, what's the context? What do you mean by that? What's the context of this project? What's the context of this idea? And it comes back too, is like, you know, if you question the context. And amazing story, so just bear with me for a second. It was, I think about 7:51 on Friday, January 12th last year, in a busy Washington State train station. A young white guy, late 20s, maybe early 30s, nothing too outrageous, denim jeans, long sleeve shirt, baseball cap, walked into the busy train station, up against the wall near a trash can, put down a violin case and opened it up. Put out a violin, nothing too exciting there, grabbed some money, seated the violin case and turned around to face the passers-by. For the next 31 minutes, he started to play violin. Just played the Mozarts, the barks, all the classical stuff, and as the guys in the grey three-piece suits walk past, and kids in their school uniform with their iPods in, completely ignoring them into school, and for 31 minutes, just play. Nothing too outrageous, made a few dollars here or there, and then one lady stopped and stood there for about 10 minutes in absolute awe of this guy. Just jaw was down, just staring at him in absolute amazement. And he stopped playing, and she walked up to him, and in a just almost in the same sort of glee that Johnny said about the crap in hitting the ceiling looking for the pony. "Are you Joshua Bell?" And the guy with a bit of a wry smile said, Yeah, I am." And it really means nothing, but when you know who Joshua Bell is, he is an Avery Fisher Award-winning violinist. Now, what that actually means is basically the best violinist in the world. And so in that 31 minutes, just playing, looking like an ordinary bloke, he made a total of $43. Yet two nights before, that woman had paid $120 to see him play for an hour and a half. And it's just an amazing story about the power of context. He felt that he actually played better in that crowded train station than he did on stage two nights before, because he didn't have the pressure. He normally earns $1,000 a minute playing violin. In that 31 minutes, he made $43. And it's the power of context, is that music was better. He was playing $1 million violin, apparently. The Washington Post did this as a bit of an exercise for an article. And apparently they got some, magic violin so he could play that, and a random story there. But it was just really interesting that it's not about the music. So it's not necessarily about the words I'm saying right now. It's about the context in which you take it. It's the context in which anything happens, JCI events, your life, whatever it might be. It's not necessarily about the words or the actual actions. It's about what context it actually is. And I just found that really, really interesting. I wanted to use that in the speech somehow, so I kind of just worked that in randomly tonight.
Is that the first time you've done that?
That is the first time I've spoken about that. So it's actually part of a book I'm working on, but that's a completely different story. And the final story is, I guess, what are you afraid of? Because one of the biggest things that everyone sort of comes or faces first and foremost when they start thinking about doing something for the first time is scared of something going wrong, scared of losing something. And a quote that I heard recently, which I absolutely love, is, "The enemy of the great is the good. The enemy of the great is the good." And I actually heard this from a guy named Mystery. Anybody read the book The Game by Neil Strauss? Or heard of The Game by Neil Strauss? Another book you should absolutely read. It's about picking up women. because it is the most amazing book on social psychology. It's about this guy by Neil Strauss. I'll put it in context. It's funny, I didn't mean that. It's actually quite funny. I actually read that book in bed one night while Fleur was actually reading. It's not that into you. I've got a photo of our bedside table with the book called The Game, and then she's reading this. But it's 12 months ago and we're still together, so it's all right. But the book's by a guy called Neil Strauss, who was a New York Times journalist and a writer for the Rolling Stone, and was asked to basically write a review of this underground book, I can't remember what it was called, but about pickup artists and this whole community that was growing about 5 or 6 years ago online. And he was a really, really nerdy music reporter, think of a real nerdy guy and just times by three. Photos of him, his hair was bad, he had big fat glasses, no dress sense, white as hell, all that sort of stuff. And read this book and just completely changed his mind, just his perception of just so many different stuff. And he went on to really get into that whole community of pickup artists and became what was known in the community as the world's greatest pickup artist. And basically the book called The Game goes through that, his process of how he sort of got involved and all that sort of stuff. And it doesn't talk about getting laid or anything like that. Obviously that's part of it, but it's all about social dynamics. And actually the biggest thing is actually approaching and the confidence of opening up a conversation. That's fundamentally what all the book's about. It's not about getting laid or anything like that, which is what when you first hear about it, you go, "Well, hang on." It's an amazing book about just human psychology, NLP, personal development and personal growth. And I really highly recommend everyone reading it. It's not sleazy at all. There's some colourful stories in there, but besides that, it's actually a really good book. And in there, they talk about approach anxiety, which is one of the biggest things I get. What do they call them? I always wear chumps. I can't remember what the actual name they use. They've all got sort of code names for all these different people. The chumps use when they lost my train of thought. The chumps have the biggest issue with approach and opening conversations. So what they actually teach them is to actually find a set, which is a group of girls. It's called a set. So you approach a set that you don't actually want to take home that night. In terms of, you might see a 10 over there, like a girl you really admire. Don't start with them. Don't try and approach them first. You actually go and approach a set of people you might rank as a 6 or a 7, just to get the confidence up, and actually so you don't feel so scared. And what they found is when people actually do that, they go out and approach and they start a conversation with a set of 6 or 7s. I know it sounds really, really bad. I don't do it, so. They basically settle for the good. They start a conversation and get involved with this group of girls, and they stay there. They don't end up leaving and going for the 10, which is what their ambition was initially, because they settle on the good. Because the enemy of the great is the good. They finally settle. And that's a big thing that applies to so many different aspects of life. Business, personal life. Think about it. How many times have you gone with something to start with and you settle and you stay there? You haven't gone for the great because you've got the good. And in business it happens so many times. Is you get stuck in a rut, or you go after a particular sort of marketplace to start with, because they're the lowest lying fruit, they're the easy fish to catch, but you don't want to take that risk to the next step. In friends, in life, in whatever it might be, one of the biggest things that stops you doing something new is that what you've got is good. What you can have is great. So that's really, really important. Now, if you do actually go out and do something for for the first time, oh, the places you will go.
Dr.
Zeus. Congratulations. Today is your day. You're off to great places. You're off and away. You have brains in your head, you have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself any direction you choose. You're on your own, and you know what you know. And you are the guy who'll decide where to go. You look up and down streets, look them over with care. About some you will say, I don't choose to go there. With your head full of brains and your shoes full of feet, you're too smart to go down not so any good street. And you may not find any you want to go down. In that case, of course, you'll go straight out of town. It's opener there, in the wide open air. Out there things can happen, and frequently do, to people as brainy and footsie as you. And when things start to happen, don't worry, don't stew. Just go right along, you'll start happening too. Oh, the places you will go. You'll be on your way up, you'll be seeing great sights. You'll join the high flyers who soar to high heights. You won't lag behind, because you'll have the speed. Bear with me. You'll pass the whole gang, and you'll soon take the lead. Wherever you fly, you'll be the best of the best. Wherever you go, you will top all the rest. Except when you don't, because sometimes you won't. I'm sorry to say, but sadly it's true. The bang-ups and hang-ups can happen to you. You can get all hung up in a prickly perch, and your gang will fly on. You'll be left in the lurch. You'll come down from the lurch with an unpleasant bump, and the chances are then you'll be in a slump. And when you're in a slump, you're not in for much fun. Unslumping yourself is not easily done. You come to a place where the streets are not marked. Some windows are lighted, but mostly they're dark. A place you can sprain both your elbow and chin. Do you dare not to stay out? Do you dare to go in? How much can you lose? How much can you win? And if you go in, should you turn left or right? Or right in three quarters? Or maybe not quite? Or go around the back and sneak in from behind? Simple it's not, I'm afraid you will find, for a mind maker upper to make up his mind. You can get so confused and you'll start to race down long wiggled roads at a breaknecking pace, and grind on for miles across weirdish wild space, headed, I fear, to a most unpleasant place, the waiting place. For people just waiting for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow. Or waiting around for a yes or a no, or waiting for the hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting. Waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for the wind to fly a kite. Or waiting around for Friday night, or waiting perhaps for Uncle Jake, or to pot to boil, or a better break. Or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wig with curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. No, that's not for you. Somehow you'll escape. All the waiting and staying, you'll find the right places where boom bands are playing. With banner flip-flopping, once more you'll ride high, ready for anything under the sky, ready because you're that kind of guy. Oh, the places you will go, there's fun to be done, there are points to be scored, there are games to be won, and there are magical things you can do with a ball. You'll make the winningest winner of all. Fame, you'll be famous as famous can be, with the whole wide world watching you on TV. Except for when they don't, because sometimes they won't. I'm afraid that sometimes you'll play lonely games too, games you can't win because you'll play against you. All alone, whether you like it or not, alone with something, you'll be quite a lot. And when you're not alone, there's a very good chance you'll meet things that scare you right out of your pants. There are some down the road between hither and yon that can scare you so much you won't want to go on. But you will go on, through the weather be foul, on you will go through the emperor's prowl, on you will go through the heckin' crack's howl, onward up many a frightening creek, through the arms, though your arms may get sore and your sneakers may leak. On and on you will hike, and I know you'll hike far, and face up to the problems, whatever they are. And you will succeed. Yes, you will indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. Kids, you'll move mountains. So be your name Buxbaum or Bixby or Bray or Mordica Ali Van Allen O'Shea. You're off to great places. Today is your day. Your mountain is waiting, so get on your way. That's my formal stuff done, basically. Do you want to call that formal? I don't know what else you want to speak about. I've kind of left the last half as open to answer questions, talk whatever you want to talk about. Anyone, fire away.
Do you want to maybe recap on the things that you've done?
Mm-hmm.
So you've
put myself
studied,
in context.
Yeah, you've
sure.
studied, you now run M2.
Yep.
The thing, yeah.
Okay, do you want to go?
Yeah.
No? It's my quick story. Studied commerce at Deakin. Down in Geelong, and when I finished that I moved to Florida for a while and lived overseas and did a lot of partying and that kind of stuff. And when I came back to Melbourne, didn't really want to get a job, fell in love with a girl in America, was planning to move back there and do that sort of stuff, and took a part-time job at Athlete's Foot in Werribee, which is where I worked during university and what I was doing in the US. I was working with Athlete's Foot over there, sort of a reconnaissance mission, so to speak, working out how they did stuff in America compared to Australia and trying to do some information sharing. So I was working at Athlete's Foot in Werribee, and it was a store that just recently opened, so I was helping get off the ground. It was pretty quiet, so I spent a lot of days behind the counter just reading books and stuff like that. And one of the books I read was called The 1 Minute Millionaire. In there, it told a story of a guy in New York back in the late 80s who bought all the timber that was part of the Brooklyn Bridge walkway. He made up little A5 size certificates with the history of the Brooklyn Bridge and a piece of the timber. And so the story around the campfire goes, he sold them for about $20 each and made a couple of $1 million out of it. Now, being 21 years old with a lot of ambition, I thought, how can I steal that idea? So I started to think how I could actually replicate that in Australia and what sort of places in Australia are actually getting demolished so I could try and grab some timber from. And it was that stage when the MCG was getting redeveloped for the Commonwealth Games we had here in 2004. So I made a couple of phone calls to the, and was able to track down the wrecking company who was doing the demolition of the grandstand. So I got onto them and was able to get my hands on a lot of the timber. It was part of the old seating of the Ponsett stand, as well as all the old MCC crested carpet that was part of the members' pavilion. So that was dog ugly carpet, but it had the MCC crest all over it. And being a sports junkie and sports memorabilia fanatic, it was like this dollar signs, beautiful. So over the phone, made him an offer and got it for an absolute steal. And then turned around and made a series of memorabilia pieces out of it with a photo of the MCG, piece of the carpet, a plaque, sold them off for a little bit and wrote a press release. 21-year-old sells MCG for under $500. And it went absolutely ballistic. Just for about 2 weeks straight, it was just media after media, got on pretty much all the major newspapers and media places in Australia. And that was sort of, I guess, my real first business that actually got major headlines. I had a couple of smaller businesses before that, and that was my first real venture that just, I guess, got me exposure and credibility and that sort of stuff. The Herald Sun called me Australia's Richard Branson, which I still milk to this day, for obvious reasons. It's a cool little moniker. So since then, I've gone on and founded a few different companies. The biggest one and my main day-to-day headache and babysitting business, I guess, is a company called Infinity Telecommunications, which is a phone system company doing very, very boring things like selling and installing phone systems for companies around Australia. We've got a lot of offshoots and business units underneath that now, discountmobiles.com.au, mobile phone website, headset company, on-hold phone message company, and that sort of stuff. And myself and my business partners have no freaking idea how to install a phone system. I still don't know and never want to know, but we're one of the larger companies in Australia doing phone systems now. Purely on the basis that every sort of market I try and tackle is a market that is dealing with technicians, not marketers, which is actually sort of the topic of my book, my new book that's coming out in June this year, is that so many people actually start a business product first. They might have done an apprenticeship and go, yep, cool, I had to install phone systems, now I'm going to leave my boss and start my own company, and have no freaking idea how to market. And that's the market that we're in telco space, which is just, it's just like shooting fish in the barrel. It's great because they don't have no idea how to market and how to talk English to the customers, and they talk tech and that sort of stuff. So that's, I guess, my main day-to-day business. I've got other small bits and pieces since then. One of the main projects I'm working on at the moment is a thing called the 30-Day Challenge, which has been going about 4 or 5 years now. I've only been involved the last couple. It's basically a challenge once for 30 days every August, where we teach people how to start a business on the internet and make their first dollar online. That's all. The whole aim is to make $1 in 30 days. Last year we had 54,000 and something people go through it from all around the world. So it's all free, completely free. Obviously we've got back-end membership courses and stuff like that, but it's all how to make a dollar online without spending a cent. So that's sort of a project that we do every August, which is quite ironic given it's 31 days in August, and we call it the 30-day challenge. But we started in July and moved to August. So that's the foundation of my new book that's coming out in June, July. And that's pretty much me in a nutshell, I guess.
It's a pretty good nutshell.
Yes. And what are you doing with your time? Not a whole lot. I'm just going to grab some water. Sorry. I used to race triathlons relatively seriously when I was at uni. So I still just sort of run when I can and swim a little bit. But I'm one of those stupid people who just love to work. I'd like to go to the office at 7 o'clock in the morning and leave at 6:30 at night, even though I don't really have to these days. But I love my girlfriend, but I just like being at work. work actually for me is actually enjoyable. Like, I like doing silly little side projects. Like, something I'm just recently working on at the moment is a couple of iPhone applications. Which to me is actually enjoyable, even though it's a business that's hopefully going to be profitable and that sort of stuff, but it's something I actually enjoy doing. So I don't have a lot of spare time. What I do is just sort of speaking to things like this or hanging out with friends, but mostly I work ridiculous hours.
So, out of curiosity, when was the last time you did something for the first time?
I was almost going to be today. I was about to go to the movies by myself today. My girlfriend's in the Gold Coast, and it was so hot. I thought, where's cool? Go to the. So I almost did that. I try and do something for the first time every day, which is sometimes hard, sometimes just silly little things. Things like I'll just go up and start a conversation with a stranger using the pickup principles just to start a conversation. It sounds silly, but like the actual stuff they teach actually helps you start a conversation with anybody. Just do stuff like just give random money to people on the street, just like $5 here or there, like leave $5 on the train just randomly. Just like it's not a big thing, but it doesn't have to be a big thing. Just like something small, you can do crazy stuff like go rock climbing or jump out of a plane. I'm getting a tattoo in 2 weeks, which will be something I'm doing for the first time. So just try and find something, just a small thing, just to keep unique.
So would you go bucket list?
A bucket list of just things I want to achieve in my life? I've got a list that I wrote, 5-6 years ago that I haven't even looked at for a while. I sat down one day and I just spent an hour just running all these wacky, crazy things that I want to do, and finding out that sort of stuff has happened to come true without thinking about it. Every year, I actually sit down and write the goals for the year, which is actually sort of where I was actually, at the time I was writing that, is when I came up with the question of when was the last time I did something for the first time. So that's sort of more just an annual goal list, and then just some crazy sort of, lifetime stuff that I don't look at that often. Sort of once a year, I pick it up and go, anything I've actually achieved without thinking about it, and new things sort of come up. Yeah. Anyone else?
What inspires you?
Hey, one of the questions I was going to ask you, so how do you approach something that you're going to do for the first time? How do you approach something like that? What's inside you that motivates you to do that? How do you approach?
I get bored ridiculously easy. That's probably what motivates me to do stuff like that. I was saying before, like, I'm sick of the telco company. Like, to be honest, like, because the business runs itself now. So that's why I like doing stuff like iPhone apps and just stupid little things, because it's something new and unique.
So attention deficit disorder is good?
Absolutely. Absolutely. self-diagnosed, absolutely all over that. So it's that sort of thing. I just get bored really easy, and I have a lot of ideas, and I just like testing stuff, which I think is good for a marketer, which sort of is a good trait that I have that actually links to my passion, which is marketing, that like I realised very early that I had no answers, but I'm willing to test. So like everything we do, in anything I do, I test. So it's all about finding the results and just having an idea and seeing if it's going to work. Not making it work, seeing if it's going to work. And it's a small distinction, but it's a damn big distinction as well. So many people have an idea and go, if it doesn't work, oh, I failed. I'm like, I don't care if it works or not. I'm happy to throw money at something or time at something just to see if it works. And I treat it as a hobby more than a life-threatening business, which is sort of why I, on my spare time, I do weird stuff like that because it's a fun test for me. That's sort of...
Don't get afraid to make mistakes.
Yeah, there's no such thing as failure. It's just a test result. There's a great book called Dare to Fail, which is from a... He's somewhere in the... Singapore, I think it's from Singapore. Billy Lin is the name of the book. And it's an awesome, awesome book. And it's just about, you know, failures. No, there's no such thing as failure. It's just a test result. That's all it is. So, yeah, does that sort of answer the question?
No, it's good. Thank you.
Kind of similar question. Okay. I was going to ask, you know, what inspires you?
It's just having a weird, stupid idea and seeing it's going to work. That's what it comes down to. It's just stupid ideas that this is actually work and people are interested in. It's not necessarily about making the money that comes with it or, like, well, there's obviously stuff I do that has no money and no money related to it. But it's just like, I wonder if this stupid, outrageous idea would actually intrigue other people than just me. Do other people have the same weird, I was going to say fetishes, but it's on.
Idiosyncrasies.
That's the word, idiosyncrasies. Yeah. Actually, thank you very much. The wordsmith right here. Have the, you know, the, something that I come up with that other people will like what I want. It's a bit of an ego thing. It's like, hey, can I create something that other people want? There's definitely ego in there. You know, hey, I'm that good that I come up with an idea that people want to exchange money for, or exchange time for, or also invest time in for a greater cause and things like that. So, yeah.
Well, you gave a lot of time to them, JCC.
Not much I'd like to these days. Hopefully in sort of 6 months I can actually start giving more time now. The business is running by itself.
But I think the thing was that when you were involved with the board, you were really enthusiastic and then other stuff came along and you were big enough. And, I don't know. But you're super savvy. But you were big enough and brave enough to say, I can't do this right.
Yeah.
Has that been part of your success as well? Actually being able to say, I want to do this, I'll try this, maybe I need to put a stop on this as well?
Absolutely. I think something actually you and I were discussing earlier, which I'll touch on, actually fits perfectly in this, and you might have been a loaded question.
May well have been.
probably, I don't know, three or four years ago now, I started a master's degree in accounting. First semester, two subjects, passed one, failed the other. Second semester, didn't even go to the exams, so I realised I didn't do enough study. And I guess what I realised halfway through that second semester is, when the hell am I going to use this shit? I've spent money investing in a master's degree and obviously time, but I actually stopped investing time in it halfway through because I'm like, well, I'm never actually going to use the stuff I learn because I'm going to have people working for me. So it's a bit egotistical and stuff, but people working for me who are doing that sort of stuff. I know enough about accounting to be able to read the books and make sure they're right. Why am I investing time here when I'm not going to get a return? When over here, I can invest my time and get a return. And sort of come back almost to the bucket list kind of stuff. But I have so many projects that are half finished that I'll go back to at some stage, but I got halfway through and I was like, well, yeah, I can finish it through, but I can actually go over here and hopefully get a better return over here. And there's absolute pros to that, being the ADD, you know, not finishing certain stuff. But there's obviously so many cons to that as well, is that, you know, it's not about giving up. And I guess if you read Seth Godin's book, The Dip, talks about, you know, you want to push through that sort of stuff, and I sort of disagree with that book to a certain extent. One thing I'm actually starting to do now is actually outsource a hell of a lot more. The 4-Hour Work Week, anyone read that by Tim Ferriss? Changed my life. I should actually start a bookshop, shouldn't I?
Yeah. Book club.
It's called the 4-Hour Work Week.
So you play an email about all of the
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to give me business cards or write your stuff down, I'll shoot an email out with all the stuff I've randomly spoken about and a link to the audio as well. 4-Hour Work Week, to give you the quick 30-second overview, is about starting and running a business or a lifestyle in 4 hours a week so you can actually live the life you want. which is sort of what we try and teach in the Theatre Day Challenge about building a business without you having to be there. You can build a business whether you're in Illawarra, Perth, middle of the Maldives, on holidays on Facebook or whatever it might be. And what I talk about is actually outsourcing stuff. Like, I've got a couple of virtual assistants that work for me. One's $8 an hour and one's $6 an hour. One is a US lady, early 40s, $8 an hour. Other ones in the Philippines who worked for $6 an hour doing PA stuff. Today I hired some people to do a bunch of online marketing stuff for me for $1.11 an hour US. Odesk.com, Elance.com are two of the greatest websites ever.
Yeah.
They're basically a eBay for services. So you can go on there and put up a project and say, look, I want whatever it might be, legal advice, which I probably wouldn't take off there. But even from like content writing to graphic design to iPhone app creation to whatever it might be, like just like anything that you can almost imagine. And people come and bid on it and say, look, this is my qualifications, this is my history, and there's feedback from people who have used those providers like eBay, and you can get some amazing, amazing stuff. And I had a six-page article written today, which was amazing for $85. I have had stuff for $1 an hour being done. I've had $8 an hour sort of stuff. I've got a lady in Belarus who's doing one of my iPhone apps for me for $100. And, based on some numbers of stuff that I've tested with some other people that have done similar apps and stuff like that, a friend of mine released an app 3 weeks ago. It's made $26,000, an iPhone application. So I don't think I made that much money. Like, I don't think this app's that good, but $100, make $5,000-$6,000 for an idea. And all I had to do was I posted the iPhone brief on Odesk. I posted the actual content I needed created, like the actual stuff I wanted to actually create to actually be in the iPhone app on Elance. That cost me $110. App cost me $100. It cost me $99 to have an iPhone developer account. So $300 with maybe 3 hours of my time all up. And because the process has been outsourced to my VA, she's actually doing the whole process for me and running the whole thing. So that might cost me $350 all up, and might make $5,000-$6,000 over a fun app just for a bit of fun. So yeah, does that kind of answer that question at all?
Yeah.
Complete tangent, I know. Sorry.
You seem to switch between meetings. How do you decide what to follow?
Badly. It comes down to, has it kept my interest? Which is not necessarily a good thing, which is why I'm starting to outsource a lot more so I actually can see the project through. When I get bored with it, I just sort of go, yeah, someone else finish it, which I'm getting better at. It came down to initially coming back to it, it's like, well, can I do it as good as I could? And then I sort of realised, well, an idea half implemented is better than an idea not implemented at all. So, implement something half done, test the results. If it sticks, then I'll get back involved and actually push it further. It comes down to just gut feeling. As I'm developing it, do I really still feel like it's a good idea? Have I got bored with it? No real proper science, unfortunately. That's not the greatest answer, I know, but it's sort of...
Okay, you take that out of a business or idea context.
Yep.
Places to live, people to associate with.
Are you enjoying yourself? Like, as soon as you get bored with it, get out of the rut. Like, it's. I think the more you... Like, this is speaking from outside, looking in rather than being in there, but I think if you the longer you stay in something you're not enjoying, the harder it is to get out. Because if it's quicksand, if you start sinking more and more and more, so it's harder to jump out than it is at the start. So I think it's just coming down to enjoyment. Are you getting bored with it? Do you think it's going? Do you see a future? Is there a light at the end of the tunnel? If you take Seth Godin's dip book seriously, with any good idea or any good thing, there's always going to be a dip through it. Is what he basically preaches, saying you've got to push yourself through the dip. The only way I think you can actually push yourself through the dip is if you see there's going to be a positive at the other end. So that's not probably the best answer, but that's sort of the best I can come up with.
Your emotions getting away, is this your feeling?
I think it's one of my good things is no.
Yeah,
I get completely detached. Like, I'll come up like... Fleur, my girlfriend, she's a makeup artist and the furthest thing from an entrepreneur I could think of. which I find great because I'm so this side on one arm, she's the opposite. So she's interested but doesn't care. She's not like the type of girlfriend that come home and she goes, oh, how was your day? What happened here? And tell me all the details.
Yeah.
I come home, we'll sit in front of the couch and watch Britney Spears film for something stupid she passionately loves. But so like, I find one of my greatest skills, I guess, which I don't know how to develop, so I can't teach it, I don't think, is that I can easily disconnect from stuff. I don't get caught up. I sleep well at night. Even with no matter what's going on, I can sort of just go, well, that's there, this is here, and let it go.
Yeah.
So I'm really lucky like that. Unfortunately, I don't know how to teach it or where that comes from, but I guess I'm blessed with that, which is pretty cool. So I just, yeah, it's pretty much disconnected.
What's the best thing you've
done? The best thing I've done? Find my girlfriend Fleur. Is that the politically correct answer? Sorry. She's not in the same state.
That's being recorded.
See? Good. I mean, that's perfect. Done. Sweetie, listen to this.
How come you never say things like
that? The best thing I've ever done. I don't know. It's hard to say. So, going to America and living overseas was awesome. I love doing that. I love traveling. Something I've really done, but I'm the godfather to two great kids, which is not something I've really done, but I love that. It's not things that I've done really that I actually love. It's like things like in the office, like we've got a 17-year-old girl who's been with us for 12 months, 15 months, who is doing like a traineeship. She probably has the third most important job in our company. She coordinates installations of our phone systems. She's 17. We pay her well for a 17-year-old. We don't pay her like this year what the job is technically worth. We've got someone else in. We pay her well above what a 17-year-old should be earning. And she's absolutely phenomenal. So to see her sort of come through as a trainee from like leaving school at year 10 to having probably the third most important job in our company by coordinating installations of our phone system, because we're the only company in the country that offers 100% money back guarantee on the phone systems we sell and install. So if you're completely stupid or completely smart, you can do what you want. So to give that, like obviously it's the implementation of the phone system has to go exceptionally smoothly or the client's got every right to say, piss off, take it out, give us money back. So to give that role to a 17-year-old, I'm kind of proud that I can do that. I don't know that we've been able to sort of, yes, we were damn lucky to find her, to actually just stumble across her. We've had other trainees and do have who drive my heading. So I was kind of lucky to find her, but at the same time, to be able to give her that responsibility and that trust and see her develop, I'm really proud of. So it's not the stuff I've done, it's stuff that's sort of the result, if that makes sense. Not the action, it's a result. It's sort of, it's a bit weird, a bit esoteric, but yeah.
Anyone else have any other questions?
Thank you very much. I will stop the recording.